Well, we're in our last week of our series, No Outsiders, and I think today we're going to try and get at what I believe is at the heart of what all of us do from time to time. We all have groups of people that we put over there, and we distance ourselves from these groups of people or these types of people, and we create outsiders out of certain groups or types of people. And I believe at the heart of why we all do that is a fear that sort of lurks inside all of us. And it's a fear that I believe God has something to say about. To get into this today, I want you, if you grew up with siblings, raise your hand. Raise your hand. If you grew up with siblings, a lot of you. If you raised more than one child, if you raised siblings, raise your hand. Right? There's some more of you. So here's the deal. I grew up in a family where there were a whole mess of kids. And now I'm raising two boys of my own. And if there's something I have realized, it's this. Sibling rivalry is for real. It is for real. And I think we realized this especially over the last week when we were all confined to the house, right? It gets really intense and our boys were after each other. Oh my gosh, it was chaos. But here's something else I think I've learned the older I get and as I watch my kids. Sibling rivalry isn't just about the two of them competing to figure out who's stronger, who's smarter, who's more talented. A sibling rivalry is about a competition they have for me. It's a competition they have to determine where they're at in the pecking order. It's a competition to determine what portion of my acceptance, what portion of my love, what portion of my blessing each of them are going to get. You see, and it looks like this in our house. In our house, it looks like this. One of them will say, "Hey, Dad, come over here. Let me show you what I did at school." And of course, when I go over there, then the other goes, "Well, wait a second. Dad, come over here. Let me show you the new song I learned on the piano. Hey, Dad, come over here. Let me show you the art project I did." And before long, it turns into this. "Hey, Dad, come over here. Let me tell you what your other son messed up on. Hey, Dad, come over here. Let me tell you how he got in trouble," right? We do this, right? We have these sibling rivalries because we want to know what portion of our parents' blessing we're going to get. And of course, it's just kid stuff, right? A few years ago, I think I have a picture here. My entire family gathered. That's my grandmother. You can say, "Aw." And I got that goofy hat on because Grandma invited all the grandkids. There's a whole mess of grandkids in our family. Invited us all to her house. She was going to sell her house and move into assisted living. And she wanted us, all the grandkids, to come to her house so that she could dole out all her treasures to us. She wanted to give my wife Katie and I her Norwegian china. She wanted to give my cousin all of Grandpa's tools. She wanted to dole all this stuff out. And we really didn't care about her stuff, to be honest. All we wanted to do is to spend a day with Grandma and with all our cousins. And what was funny is how the stories would just kind of flow out of our mouths. We'd say, "Hey, Grandma, do you remember the time you took us uptown and you bought me that goofy hat?" And then my cousin would say, "Hey, Grandma, do you remember the time we were out at the lake and you saw me get up on water skis for the first time? Hey, Grandma, do you remember the time that I got to ride in Grandpa's buggy with you in the parade?" But here's what's great about those stories. Soon those stories evolved into something that looked more like this. "Hey, Grandma, do you remember when you made that special meal for me when I was in college? That's the sort of thing you do for your favorite grandchild, right?" And then my cousin would tell a story. "Remember when you saw me score the winning touchdown in that football game? You were there for your favorite grandchild." And it went back and forth. We all want to know that we have somebody's blessing, don't we? We all have this deep desire within us to know that we have someone's affirmation, that we have someone's blessing, whether that be a mom, that be a dad, that be a grandparent, that be a coach, that be a boss, that be a friend. But here's the problem with this. Here's the problem. We have this belief, maybe it comes out especially in our families, that there's only so much blessing to go around. That there's a finite amount of acceptance and love and blessing. And so when that sister goes to state in music, that somehow I lose a portion of my blessing. And this belief that when that brother gets that scholarship to that college, somehow I'm losing a portion of my parents' love and their acceptance. We have this belief that there's only so much acceptance and love and blessing to go around. And when that brother gets that job in Atlanta and he's able to fly all around the country on the company's credit card, we believe that we lose some of that blessing. And we have this fear that we're going to be left empty-handed. You see, we have this belief, I think, and it starts when we're young in our families, that there's only so much blessing, so much acceptance, so much approval to go around. Well, it must have been the same way back in Jesus' day, because there's a story we hear in the Bible. It's actually an Old Testament story about two brothers whose names were Jacob and Esau. They were twins. And the Bible says that they even wrestled with one another in the womb. That's what their sibling rivalry was. It was so thick that they wrestled even in the womb. In all their days of their lives, they were wrestling with one another. They were worried who was going to get what portion of the blessing. And so the story goes that their father Isaac was old in age, and he was preparing to die. He had lost his sight and he was stuck in bed. And he called his one son Esau to his bedside and said, "Esau, you're my favorite son." You're not supposed to have favorites, parents. But he had a favorite, his son Esau. Esau was a hunter and gatherer type. He was the kind of guy who loved to go hunting and fishing and all of this. The Bible even says, strangely, that he was a hairy man. I don't know why it said that, but I imagine he was the kind of guy who grunted a lot and scratched himself. And his father calls him and says, "Son, before I die, I want one thing. I want you to prepare some wild game for me. Go hunting and bring it back and prepare a wild game feed for me before I die." And then he said, "Once we do that, once we share that meal, then I'll give you my blessing." And a blessing was a really big deal way back when. A blessing would include words of encouragement from your father, would include maybe your father's predictions of your life in the future, but it would also include practical things like your inheritance. It would include where your father wanted you to be in the pecking order of the family once he passed. Well, Jacob, his brother, and Rebekah, his mom, they heard about this, and they devised a plan to steal that blessing, because they had this idea that if Esau got the blessing, there would be nothing left for Jacob. And so they came up with this ridiculous plan. It's comical, actually. Rebecca went and found one of Esau's shirts and put it on Jacob so that Jacob would smell like his brother. He also took some skin of a goat and wrapped it around Jacob's arms so that he would feel hairy like his brother. And then they prepared some stew. And while Esau was out hunting, Jacob brought this stew with this ridiculous costume on to his father, who was preparing to die, and fed him. And that's where we pick up on the story. Let's keep going to the story. It says, Jacob said to his father, he's dressed up in this costume, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord your God gave me success," he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he proceeded to bless him. "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "I am," he replied. Then he said, "My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing." And the story said when Esau found out about this, he was livid. He was livid. Why did Jacob do this? Because Jacob believed that if Esau received that blessing, he might be left empty-handed. That there might not be any blessing left for him. And so while Esau is out hunting and gathering, he sort of pushes Esau out of the story. In a sense, he makes an outsider, if you will, of Esau. He makes him an outsider through his trickery because he's afraid, if we're honest. Because he's afraid. You see, I think we do the same thing. We create outsiders because we're afraid. We're afraid that we're going to lose out. For example, if you're someone who watches Fox News, likely in your life, Democrats are outsiders to you. And you know why that is. Because the things that are said on Fox News make you afraid of Democrats. Now, if you're someone who watches MSNBC, likely in your life, Republicans are outsiders to you. Why? Because what they say about Republicans on MSNBC makes you afraid. If you listen to certain politicians, Mexicans are outsiders because what they say makes you afraid. Or maybe it's African Americans. Maybe it's wealthy people. Maybe it's poor people. Maybe it's Muslims. Whatever it might be, you see, we hear these things and they make us afraid, and we create outsiders out of groups of people. We even do this in churches. I hate to admit this. There are times where we look at certain groups of people and we sort of push them off to the side. We say, that group of people, those young people with kids, they don't give as much. They don't show up as much. Or, that group of people, they're new people. They haven't been around long enough. They don't know how we do things around here. Oh, that group of people, they worship in this way. We create groups of outsiders. And we do this because we're afraid. We're afraid that if those new people come in and they change things, it's going to look different. Their kids are going to make noise. They're going to sit in my pew. And so we create outsiders out of fear. You see, here's the thing. When we create outsiders, we only feed our fears. Let me say that again. When we create outsiders, we feed our fears. It was the same in the story of Jacob and Esau. We pick up again on this story 20 years later. Jacob and Esau have not said a word to one another. And Jacob hears word that Esau is coming near, and Jacob is terrified. He's so terrified, it's almost like he prepares for battle. He takes all his servants and he lines them up, and then he puts his wives behind them and his kids behind them. He gathers hundreds of goats and donkeys and camels because just maybe he can bring those as a gift to his brother Jacob as a way to make reparations for the pain that he's caused his brother. He has spent 20 years terrified and afraid. You see, here's what we know. When we create outsiders, as he did of Esau, we feed our fears. The story picks up like this. It says, Jacob looked up and there was Esau. He was coming with his men, 400 men, so he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and two female servants. He put the female servants and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead, and he bowed down to the ground 7 times as his brother approached him. It says, but Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and he kissed him, and they wept, it says. You see, Jacob had spent all those years terrified. But Esau could have made an outsider of Jacob. He could have decided that, but instead he opened his arms and he welcomed his brother Jacob. That crummy brother who had hurt him all those years ago. He opened his arms and he welcomed him. And it says he threw his arms around him and they wept. They wept. Well, they wept because there was no more fear. When Esau welcomed his brother, all of a sudden the fears that they had had for 20 years, they were gone. You see, here's what I think. Though in our lives, when we make outsiders, when we create outsiders, it feeds our fear. As it says on the screen, when we welcome outsiders, we conquer our fears. You see, when we create outsiders, we feed our fears. But with God, when we welcome outsiders, we always conquer those fears. We conquer that idea that there's only so much love, there's only so much blessing to go around. When we welcome outsiders, we conquer our fears. You see, this is kind of personal to me, I gotta be honest. I have a brother who was adopted. And some of you might know that he's actually Mexican of racial descent. And most of my life growing up, I watched how people who didn't even know him made an outsider out of him. Again and again it happened as he grew up. And I saw how that only sort of grew fear in those people who made him an outsider. It grew fear in me for my brother. And it certainly grew fear in my brother. You see, when we welcome outsiders, we have the opportunity, God gives us the opportunity to conquer those kind of fears that we have of other people. Some of you have raised kids, and at one point or another, maybe they bring home a significant other. And I imagine when my wife brought me home to my in-laws, they were terrified. When they bring home that significant other, I imagine that's a terrifying moment. But you have that opportunity to ask yourself, are we going to welcome this stranger? Or are we not? Are we going to create an outsider and feed our fear? You see, I think we all have an opportunity in life. And God has created us in such a way that when we welcome outsiders, we have this opportunity to conquer our fears. I wonder what it would be like for us as a church if we were known as that church that's all about welcoming outsiders. That in our own life, if there's that coworker that you just can't get along with, if you were to be the one who would say, you know what, I know we don't get along, but I just want to get to know you. And if doing that, if welcoming them into your life and vice versa, you would conquer that fear. Or maybe there's someone of a different political persuasion than you. And what if you were to say, hey, we don't disagree, or we disagree, but I want to get to know you. I want to understand a little bit more. And what if by welcoming that outsider, you conquer that fear? Whatever it might be, someone of a different race, of a different sexual persuasion, whatever it might be, what if we were to welcome them rather then create an outsider and thereby conquer our fear. You see, I think that's how God works. You see, when we create outsiders, we feed our fears. But when we welcome outsiders, we always conquer our fears. And there's something else that happens, I think. There's something else that happens when we do this. This is my favorite part of the sermon. We realize that with God, well, with us, there's only so much love. But with God, there's always enough acceptance. There's always enough love. There's always enough blessing. There's more than enough to go around. Hopefully you won't forget that. Janitors sure won't. Can I pray for you? Gracious God, you know in our lives that we struggle with this insider-outsider game. And that in our lives we create outsiders sometimes. And you know that that just builds more and more fear within us. And so God, teach us how to welcome the outsider. Give us the courage to do that. Because we know that you've created us in such a way that when we welcome those who are different from us, those we're maybe afraid of, those who are different from us, that when we do that, we conquer fear. That's how you've wired us. God, remind us that when we do that, we shatter that game we play. That game that says there's only so much acceptance, there's only so much love, there's only so much blessing to go around. Remind us that with you, there's always more than enough. God, we pray this all in the name of your Son, Jesus, and all God's people said. Amen.